V-12. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. With most of the world's attention focused on the alien craft hovering like a hungry hawk over John Cole's Cuban office, each passing minute took the tension to all new levels. "The longer nothing happens, the sooner you're gonna have to do something," Clark mused, no need to specify that he was talking to Dan. "Even just say something, because seriously, man, people are gonna start going crazy if these things just stay there in the sky. In Beijing, our news stations aren't showing that anymore, but millions of people are stuck in the shadow of a giant spaceship right now. That can't go on forever with nothing happening." "Hello?" Emma said, answering a call so quickly that the ringtone didn't even sound. Everyone fell silent and turned to her, knowing she wouldn't have picked up unless the caller was one of the very few people she would deem worthy of attention at a time like this. Not that there had ever been a time quite like this. "Slater," she whispered, handing the phone to Dan. Without reluctance, he accepted it and listened to what she had to say. After all that had happened, he was well past considering how surreal it was that the President of the United States not only cared about his opinion, but actively sought it out in times of crisis. The question Slater asked was one Dan had seen coming, but that didn't make it any less disconcerting to hear. The answer, though, was clear in his mind and took no thought or effort to deliver. "Under no circumstances should you order a strike or any other kind of military action against any of these spacecraft. China is China. If they do something, the aliens might only take it out on them. But if you do something?" "Do you know anything else?" Slater asked. The straightforward wording, and even more so the straightforward tone, made it difficult for Dan not to automatically share the messenger's revelation of apparent hostility on the squadron's part, but then he realized that President Slater, like everyone else, wasn't even clear on the messenger's squadron distinction. He gulped, looked at Emma, and decided to unload. "Well, as soon as the mothership appeared, I gotta—" Mid-sentence, Dan fell to the ground. He wasn't grasping any part of his body, as had sometimes been the case during previous instances of contact, but his eyes fell immediately and disconcertingly closed. Emma, gravely concerned, was first to his side. Within seconds, though, she was knocked off balance by a very uncharacteristic nudge from Rooster. Having rushed over as quickly as his old paws would carry him, the dog stopped at Dan and began to whimper frantically. This worrying performance lasted only a few more seconds, however, until Rooster turned towards the basement and barked furiously at the door as though he could see a cat stealing food from his bowl. "Oh, shit," Clark groaned, sprinting towards the basement. When he opened the door, Rooster surprised everyone by running down the steps. Far from scared away by an apparent alien intervention, he was emboldened by rage or something like it. The barking got louder and louder to the extent that Clark didn't know what he would find when the floor and Jack Neal's holding chair came into view. His first guess proved correct. The chair was empty and Jack was gone. The messengers took Walker away because he was a problem, Clark tried to tell himself. They weren't on his side, they wanted him out of the picture. That makes sense here too. That makes all kinds of sense. "Clark," Emma called. "Get up here, Dan's moving, but we can see Jack." "Huh?" he called back, dashing to the steps as quickly as he had in the opposite direction. "Did they put him outside or something? What the hell is going on?" Emma took a deep breath, staring glumly at Clark while Dan pushed himself to his knees and the TV screen told the story. "Look," she said. "Jack's outside, all right, but not here. The son of a bitch is in Havana."